Mr. Cowan's Real Seven. We're discussing the ship journey when you went abroad, Mr. Cowan, and the conditions in which you were living. You were sleeping in hammocks, as you said, on the mess decks. Did you eat off the same mess deck?
Oh, no. We brought a mess room.
That'd be for sergeants, was it?
No, it was for... There was something for some, but there was a big one. The different battalions, as we say, different times for that each. So every unit was on at a different time for the meals. So it worked out properly.
Was the food better on the ship than what you'd been used to on shore?
I must admit, it was very good on the ship. Yeah, very good on the ship. I honestly say that. I'm surprised. Actually, I don't think there was any complaints about the food at all. I never even heard one.
And you say you suffered from seasickness, as did others on the boat for the first two or three days or so.
After a fortnight, everybody was tip-top and all was ready to go. All the usual jobs through the day. It was either helping the gunners, reload magazines, learning how to use Hawken gunners. It was drills around light board trails and whatnot. And we had the usual physical training every morning. I said there's also to do with helping polish and different things.
Was the ship crowded?
Yes, there was. I can't remember the exact, but I think they said there was about 1,500 on the ship. It was a pretty big boat, pretty big ship. The ship down Castle. It was a lovely boat.
Was there any activities, you know, to relax you? I'm thinking in terms of boxing competitions, sporting competitions.
Oh yes, there were boxing competitions. There's lots of indoor competitions. Boxing was one of them. And they had most of the DLI, we had domino handicaps and whatnot, and for night times and whatnot, so the lads would keep the same one on the decks. You were allowed to go on certain decks at the time. Certain decks up the height was for the women that was on board. There was a lot of women on board from the ATS and the WACS and the Air Force. So I said they were on top of decks, and you were supposed to go on different decks. You got to know where anywhere you had to go, different places. But there was always plenty of activities. I mean, letter writing and whatnot. I mean, most of the books you see I don't letter writing every night. And
these were censored, were they?
Yes, they were censored, yes. Mm-hmm. And we often wondered how they were going to say we wouldn't really want to write them. So we got to Durban.
Was there any gambling games of that nature?
You couldn't stop gambling games. I mean, most of the troops were playing cards or dominoes, and you couldn't go around and check them if they were playing for a few coppers or this and the other. But nothing excess, mate. Nothing excess. Most of the sales, you know, gambling. I mean, some lost and some not. Some wins, but I never involved any arguments or anything.
Were you inspected regularly on your decks?
Every day.
Who would carry that out?
Well, our army officers carried that out. They were given the go ahead by the Navy authorities. And everything, every inspection what you have, even your rifle inspecting, I think, most of all, you're given half an hour a day to clean your rifle. Even though you know what you cleaned the day before, but every day you have half an hour to clean your rifle. And the facilities was good for cleaning your blasters, but you had no logo for your kit. But as long as you kept it clean, that was the only one.
And on the morning, you'd have to stow away your hammocks, did you?
Oh, yes. And what you could, used to keep as much as you could in your kit bag, so you didn't have too many surplus stuff around about the deck. The utensils were handy. Your everyday shaving was handy, but your blankets, which you were issued with, was always folded neatly and put on your hammock. Everything was ship-shaped then, because it was inspected every day.
So boredom didn't become a problem in this long journey?
Well, it was becoming a little problem, but it was nothing excess. I mean, I think everybody's getting, when they knew they were getting near Durban, this and the other, they didn't wonder what was going to happen.
Was Durban your first stop?
Durban was the first stop.
What happened when you got there?
Was it Freetown or?
Freetown? Did you stop at Freetown?
That would be after Durban, was it?
No, before Durban.
3 times the first one.
Did you get off the ship there?
No, no, it was just doing stuff. Watching the divers come and diving for money and...
And the salesman came out to you?
Yes, I was saying, I didn't go with somebody else.
Did that cause a little excitement?
It caused excitement because one of the troops, I don't know who done it, but as the salesman came below for the sales stuff, somebody dropped a brick on his boat and went straight through the boat. It sunk. But we never found yet who done it. Somebody dropped something heavy, you know. You should drop all your money to them and they should pass their stuff up to you. That's what I was, I don't know where he came from. He just, all of a sudden, someone dropped it on their gun and went straight through the boat. Because it was a silly thing to do, but still nobody gave a damn where it was.
They had a particular style of English language, didn't they, the boat people?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You could understand them, though, mate. Those that you couldn't understand in good English, some had a little bit of English off, but even though they spoke their own language, they knew what to talk about because they had the stuff in their hands, what they were trying to sell. And they called the money while they should put their fingers up for the money. I don't know any way to get it. But it was interesting to watch them come out and dive. And, I mean, the young lads used to come out of some boats, and the chaps used to dive and drop maybe silver coins, and maybe an odd note, because then there's notes. And the kids used to come and dive off the boat and straight out, and they come up in their hand, and I'm working out for it. We docked there for a day, a full day. And then we went into Durban for a minute.
And what happened in Durban?
Well, we got the dock in Durban, and after we half a day, we got there one day, and one night. The next day, it came around that anybody want to go ashore to visit different places, there's a lot of people, like fruit farmers and whatnot, would take one or two people from different units to go ashore for a few days, such as go and help on a fruit farm. Or some other farm, some other big place, that was quite a few days, you get permission from the sea or like that, go for the ship. I nearly went, I was picked up to go with a fruit farmer. But one of the other sergeants had a relation in Durban, and I didn't go because it might be the same relation.
You've been promoted to sergeant by this time.
Sergeant by then, yes. Mm-hmm. I should go ashore for a couple of hours, different days. It was really interesting watching the rickshaw blokes with no taxis, just rickshaws. And we're taken very well with it, other colour people. Used to drive up every morning. With loads of fruit, pineapples, pears, peaches. And used to throw them up to the people left on board the boat that had to come go ashore. Throw them up to them. You should be standing on top of them. Loads of fruit, all the fruit. Every day he's coming. Just throw to the soldiers on board the ship. It was marvellous hospitality. And as I said, there was no trouble. We were there for about 10, 11 days. And when we left, we had the murderous singers out. A beautiful voice, she said, all the troops up, she said, stand on the edge of the pier, singing in a loud microphone. She had a beautiful voice. You ever hear about her?
Yes. Yes, most people seem to have had her singing the Minnow out of the harbour.
Yes, she was beautiful.
She was dressed in white, was she?
Yeah. Actually, she was on the harbour from as we went in, but I didn't get a chance to see her. Different ships was put in the harbour. All the ships didn't stop at Durban. Some went somewhere else. So, but I was at Cape Town Castle one day. And as I say, we were 11 days and we moved on to...
And you sailed up the Red Sea.
Yeah.
The conditions must have been particularly hot by this time.
Very hot.
What were they like on board the ship?
Well, after at a certain time of day, we were allowed to come up and do exercise and things like that. But after another certain time of day, we were told to come on deck, to keep yourself covered, you know, don't say covered, that's why you wouldn't get swimming, but I'll go down to have what they call siesta time, and down on the deck. Most of the chaps used to come inside and try and get a shady place or lie down, as soon as they got hot, they should come downstairs. We had a couple of cases of sunburn, you know, really sunburn because the sun was really hot.
Was it an offence to catch sunburn?
Yes, it was true, strictly that it was offence. If anybody got caught sunburn, it could be offence. It always was an offence in the army, that when you got abroad.
Obviously, disobeying orders to look after yourself.
Especially if you went up with a hat on. That's when the NCO was there. There was police on the ship, mind. Proper police, the military police. But the NCOs especially had to say that none of the troops had their hats off. They all with a hat on, some sort of headgear on. We had topies, all given topies to go aboard with. That's the only time we used them. We used them on board the ship. So we're getting our heads from them.
How do you change from khaki to the drill uniform, the shorts and everything?
We got an issue with the drill. Just one issue, so just for when the summer came, till we got out to where we were going.
And you wore those when they're hot?
Yeah.
When you hit,
yeah.
Do you recall crossing the line? Was there a special ceremony?
A special ceremony, but I couldn't tell you where it was. I know it was that Roman zone with the sailors and whatnot, but I didn't know what the line was. I said the truth. I wasn't officially informed. Someone said, oh, across the, is it the equator or something? No, not the equator.
Yes, across the equator.
Yeah, equator. And I said, oh, so what sort of state I did? That wasn't interesting.
When you hit the Red Sea with its, and before probably when the heat was very bad, were you allowed on deck to sleep?
No, never allowed on deck to sleep. No.
To sleep below. It must have got pretty.
Pretty hot down below, I'll tell you.
And smelly.
We're allowed to come out on deck certain times of the day. I'm not quite sure if one will go out a bit near Telford, but they'll give you a chance to come on deck. Because it was so hot and uncomfortable down there. And I think some of the NCOs asked the commanding officer where we was to come on deck. And I think there was a few allowed to come on deck. As long as they didn't pack the deck too much. And any warning of an area that had to be anytime straight off the deck. Any trouble.
And you'd have been drilled for that happening.
We'll do the program on the ship like that. I'm normal on the ship earlier on.
Did you stop at Aden?
No, didn't stop at Aden at all, no. Oh, wait a minute. I think I did. I know we stopped somewhere after Dublin.
It's usually Aden that
the
coaling stopped.
We pulled in for something. Well, a couple of days, that was.
But you weren't allowed off the ship?
No.
When you got to, did you say Port Tewfik?
Yes.
What were your first impressions of Egypt?
typical. There was that many Egyptians hanging about with carts and different things and camels and whatever, trying to get somebody to make some money somewhere. It was confusing at first, actually. Mainly about plenty of room because it was a great big long docks, you know. And then behind the docks, there was nothing else but. Desert, you know, to Telford was a sort of way from the docks, sort of thing. But all I can remember was getting up to the docks. We got an issue with some rations on board the ship, by the way. But this was the rations, and there was army trucks came from. I don't know where they came from. Some army trucks came and picked up most of the Italian, and I think some of the time they left behind somewhere to Telford. To have another convoy to take it up to Geneva. That was it. Because it was nearly half a day's journey from Tilford to Geneva, I think, if I remember correctly.
And you see your first Egyptians, Arabs, what have you?
We saw our first relics of the war. You know what had been going before we got there. And we seen a couple of prisoner of war camps. And we saw the prisoner of war camp at Geneva where we were going. We didn't know what we were going to do with Geneva. So a stack of tents. Even before we went down the road, we saw soldiers from another tents further down the road. We didn't know what they were. We found it later on, like, there's engineers and army, artillery, all these battalions. But we got to a battalion, all empty tents, the big marquee and whatnot. And we got this dispersed off the bus, there's nothing. Everybody did dispersed to different parts of the tents. A bit confusing the tent to what you do.
You kept the regimental groups together?
Yes, all together, yes.
Was it an infantry base depot, wasn't it?
Infantry base, yes, I had a base on the flag. Yes.
You were there, I think you said, for some time, weren't you?
Yeah, we were for quite a while. I can't remember, we were for quite a while. Because we used to go down the Bitter Lakes. We used to take trucks out of the Bitter Lakes for swims, you know. You ever hear about the Bitter Lakes?
I've heard of them, but what were they like?
It was two massive lakes, and among the lakes was a false ship. Supposed to be, I don't know if it was an English ship or an Italian ship. But it was at a scum, a big, long false ship. Yeah. It came from the sea, so it was a big boat, you know. But what was the most interesting when you see we were for swimming? Different times going after different days for swimming.
Was it clean?
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, very clean. Yeah. It was about half an hour to an hour's ride from the camp.
What else were you doing in the camp?
Well, every day's duties. I mean, most of the staff being the instructor, there's lots of instructors from some other battalions who were assembled when we got there. And the CEOs told what we had to do. They were all assembled there to take groups of the soldiers in different days for different things. One day you were on drill, next day you were on motors, and next time you were on bombs, sticky bombs to tanks and whatnot. All different rules of the army. This is at the table. That's those that have been through courses for them anyway. But this one's all right, but every day went. And of course, every afternoon, it was siesta time. The heat was so hot, it was over 100, well over 100. We should go back to the tents, and we wouldn't leave the tents again until 4 o'clock or half past 4 in the afternoon, when the tea was made. But straight after tiffin, that's the dinner, that's lunchtime, we should go for your tiffin, and go back to your tents and have your tiffin, and then let her ride home, or read, or get some rest. But you never turn out your tents, unless as I go to the trains in that time. Otherwise, if you're caught going out without a hat or anything like that, you're put on charge straight away. They're very, very strict.
Did you have any initial problems with your health? You know, jippy tummy that you hear about?
Oh, yes, sir. Even myself, I had bolts of jippy tummy. I mean, on the boat, I was bending in for about 3 or 4 days, but that was natural on the ship.
It was seasickness.
But, I think the same stuff we got abroad, and then I think nearly half the troops, one time or other, had to be tummies.
Is this a form of stomach and diarrhea complaint?
Any other trouble?
It didn't move into dysentery, did it? There was dysentery of prevalence?
Oh, yeah, there was dysentery, yes. Yeah. We were told the medical officer off the road, it was a big medical station off the road. He come to the camp and he told you what you had and what you hadn't got to eat and what you hadn't got to drink and what you hadn't got to eat. And as soon as you stepped over the line and you got anything like that, you knew exactly what you had. And they should tell you what medical officer straight away. But definitely was a proper thing amongst the troops as well.
Had you had lectures on board the boat as you approached Egypt to tell you how?
Yes, we had lots of lectures about the different parts of the sand and whatnot, and what they're going to be, what they're going to most like, you know, what you expect, what you didn't expect. Actually, we had quite a few lessons on what you had to drink, what you had to drink, what you had to eat. So it was just another thing that comes from a big medical lab that we got there. So, no, I think we felt that. Very little trouble except the heat.
What time did the day start for you? Did you start a little earlier with having the afternoon session?
We started at 8 o'clock in the morning. We had breakfast about half past 7.
What was the food you were getting in Egypt?
Well, it was, how would I say, typical army food until they got a special deal with Mr. Bond. But you see, typical army food.
So you'd have your breakfast, and then what would happen to you for the rest of the morning?
Well, I do all these drills you're giving me, these lying down drills, or sitting down and lecturing or something like that. It's just say, lads, maybe a while back, if you want a fire range, a while back, the big fire region in that camp.
Route marches? Did you take them out of the desert?
Yeah.
Was the desert what you'd expected it to be? Yes. What you'd imagined it to be?
I imagined it to be. It's exactly what most people imagined it to be, yes. Nothing there, and plenty of sunshine.
So then you'd have your lunch or tiffin or whatever it was you called it, and the afternoon was your siesta time in effect because of the heat. After tea, what would you be doing then?
Well, after tea, you'll be given the duty to look after yourself, things for the next day and whatnot. And in the camps, they were doing for a different functions going on, you know, like it matters, a dark team of snooker, but some of the games, like, you know, we should visit different places to and have a few weeks on a few food places or each or something to different places, but to get a good night, you know. All then there was a cinema about a quarter mile away, Sheffield Cinema, which was very, very popular with the troops. Some troops wasn't very popular with putting bricks through the screen and whatnot. You should sit there waiting for the piaster for the films. And sitting there waiting for the film to start, all of a sudden somebody put a brick through the screen. So that's just there. But eventually we'll see the film, most likely. And it passed the night away. Of course, It was a big nappy there as well, in between Sheffield Cinema, which you could walk to, and you just go to walk to, but anyway. But, and there's another really girls in the nappy as well. So there's nappy girls in the ATS, what were there, and the Navy girls as well, invited. But only so many of them each battalion, so because we wasn't a good, very large tent when we go to the dance. We used to take a ticket to go to the dance. That was only one of the games.
Had you to be, again, well turned out and checked as you went in and out of camp?
Yeah. There was no budget, a lot of those slowly dressed like that. I mean, we didn't have to wear gaiters at one thing, when you wear your pants slack and stuff like that. And occasionally, they'll come over, they could go out over next with a tie on as well. Because you had no tie then, you had your jacket tied up at the top. So, you go out with your neck open, or a shirt or anything, and sell your jacket, was too hot. That was the only regulation. After I'd been there for a while, so it wasn't too bad. The sergeant was there. We said visit different nights in the week. We might be doing the engineers' mess one Friday night, and maybe the next Friday night, or Wednesday night, at the barracks, you know, or over the Navy, to get different invasions from the sergeant's mess. So we were pretty well after that.
How did the sergeant's mess operate?
Well, pretty similar to the one that went in England, when they had a sergeant's mess kit, yeah. The sergeant had looked after the mess and he shaved all the food was in. And if there was any drink at all, there was drink. Some prisoners wouldn't seem to have had any drink, they hadn't got any rations. So we had to drink orange all night. But we still used to have different games, darts and whatnot, and let's see, so somebody. There's always found a piano in the mess. And I don't know where it came from, man, but there was always a piano in the mess. And we used to have a bit of steak, some and whatnot. Talking about those times and where you came from. And who you knew and what this that you know. If you had any friends out here, had any working friends out here, you know, out there in Egypt. But we should get it out of it.
Were you expecting to be going into action?
Well, I think all the troops that went out there expect some kind of an action. We should ask every day, we should get informed every day what was happening on the other side. Because we were quite away from Brazil and that way, and the coast where the fight, that was part of the fight, that's where the Germans first threw the Germans out, the last part of the Germans, I think we were doing that coastline, if I remember correctly, but And we've always kept in touch with the what was happening every year. And we, I think I just thought it was on the camp, expected sometime whether they were going to.
She must have been there when Rommel made his advance, which ultimately finished at Alamein. Was it a source of concern to you that you might be going into a dangerous situation, into action?
No, I think most people accepted it. That's what they're for. But they came out to help what was going on. We knew that the gym was on retreat, not going backwards.
Was this after Alamein? In October?
Before we got to Tufik, we told them about the boat, where the Germans was retreating, you know. And we said, oh, good. So, most of us, whenever I was there, we're going to fight. We're going to.
You're going to be winning.
We're winning, yes. I think we won't have someone lost it. I think Rommel had tried his attack and it was all finished with. But Montgomery had gone. By the Tony and Jordan, was named Moose then. So actually, in the camp, as the days went on, we gradually forgot about that. Just in case, unless you got a bit of information in the camp, that they were retreating, and we were winning, starting to win. So you get a bit more confidence. The looks keep saying, oh, well, that's champion. I said, Sergeant, how long are we here for? You know, I said, yeah, I don't know how long we're here for. Just stop doing it when you're going to go from here. I said, when you go from here, you most likely will enjoy the name of the battalion. That's all I told them. Of course, I was wrong. So.
Yeah, what happened? What did happen to you?
Well, when we left there, we marched with it, went to Damascus from there. But there were two of them before the battalion, and we went to Damascus, and most of the DLI and people that had come to attack the DLI was formed up, were marched out. Out of Geneva, and I'm sure it was six or eight weeks, I think, something like that. It was only 2 months. And we're told we're on our way to Damascus.
Have you any idea what date this would be?
I just couldn't tell
you. Were you just still in a draft situation, or had you been formed into another unit?
I've been formed into another unit, then.
And this was the.
I think it's. We told it on at Damascus that this was going to be a new 6th Battalion. When we got to Damascus, because we were 10-10 out of the hill. But everybody there, all the cutters were there.
How did you get from Tufik to Damascus?
Well, we went to Ismailia first. We marched through out of Ismailia, and then there we met a train to Damascus.
And that would take you across the canal.
It
would be a long journey, though.
Oh, a journey, yes. We kept stopping at different places for eating and whatnot. We stopped in there was cooks where they were opening the cooking area. I'm trying to think if some of the stations have already people there now. I think probably remember. I know that we always were going in again. And the issue was before we got back on the train, we got the issue with.
And this was a troop train, it didn't have civilians on it. Did you again have the salesman coming to the trucks, to the carriages when you stopped? Had you been warned about looking after your property and things because the thieving?
That was one thing we always don't leave it for 1 minute unless you tell somebody where you're going, or you tell somebody to watch it for you, because there's no one for 3 years here.